the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. As usual, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. We've got Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus on the line with us today, doing this from the home studio. How you doing today, Jay?
I'm having a beer and talking with my friends, so I can't complain.
Can't complain whatsoever. And as usual, the stat man, Russ Ivanek, we're going to really, really test this man today because we've got a need for a lot of stats. We've got a bunch of best ofs today. So I'll bring him in, stat man, Russ Ivanek.
Hey, how's it going? I stayed 6 feet away from preparing for this, so we'll see how it's
proud
going.
Proud of you. Very proud of you. Very, very proud of you. And we have a special guest today. Because it's quarantine time, we're trying to be as close as we can with everyone. We have, for the first time in 99 episodes, Dio Pauly Rowe. Pauly Rowe, how are you, my friend?
Hello, hello, my friends. It's been quite some time. I'm sitting here in quarantine. I don't know what year it is.
So we're excited for it, man. But we're going to lead off with a topic that I know you and Russ know nothing about and probably – but you know what? With no sports, Russ is probably loving the idea of maybe being able to watch some golf, right?
No.
And this is actually a pretty good one that we can let Paul go right from the beginning. Paul, our little before the show topic we like to do is with everything going on, would you say that the PGA Tour, because they're canceling all their events right now, would you say the PGA Tour and golf is maybe the one sport we could start up again and it would be okay? Because of the fact that you're out in this big area, you can limit the amount of people on there. They can almost play with nobody at the course but the players.
Yeah, as long as you have no one, you know, behind the ropes there watching. I think, you know, someone standing alone at the tee and then maybe just one caddy 6 feet apart, you know, probably should be just totally fine. Right. But among all the sports, it's probably the most reasonable.
I wouldn't disagree with you. I see him nodding, so I'm going to let him talk. Justin Marcus, he's a fellow golfer because him and I, we go out and play as often as we can. We're both hurting right now, not being able to get the sticks out. It's been nice the last couple of days. Jay, I know you'd love to see golf come back, but do you think it's a sport that we could actually have come back and be okay?
I'm upset that it's not happening already because it would be filling in this void of watching something. Shit, you and I can go golfing and we can stay about 50 yards apart because we're never hitting around the same side of the course.
We're never at the same spot anyway.
Put a shitty golfer with every professional golfer. They'll never be close to each other and we could be watching golf.
Well, I mean, it's going to be easy. You can go up, finish out your putt on the green. I'll stay at the cart, and then I'll walk around the green, and then I'll go finish up. We'll never have to be near each other.
And then I'll high-five you, and I'll drink your beer, and we'll go to the next
one. That's way too close, Jay. I don't want you that
– I found the flaw.
I don't want you that close to me. No, but Russ, I mean, obviously, you're not a golfer. Your favorite part of the game is talking about Dustin Johnson. It seems logical, though, that it is a sport we could probably get going again, and it wouldn't be a problem – because you can break it down. You can literally play in twosomes where the guys just stay away from each other and get out there. And at least some events don't get canceled and we get some entertainment back.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the major sports, it's the one that you have to modify the least to make it safe for everyone involved. Maybe we have to suspend caddies for a little bit because I don't know about handing a club to somebody else, if that's a contact thing. But it seems like the other ones, some are contact sports. Team sports, right? That's much, much harder to do, probably not feasible unless you just put everyone on an island for 2 weeks, quarantined in their own little locker rooms, and then we play. But another alternative, I'll flash it up to the group chat here. You can't pass it to dogs. Let's get some greyhound racing going.
Well done. Well, I will say this. NHL, I know you guys listen to our show every week. If you are listening, there's a hockey team. They're not the best team, but they're a team that through all of this would be more than happy to go out and play some games. I call that the rusty trombone should be instituted into the NHL for a couple of weeks.
Disagree.
I think the rusty trombones could do some great things for a little while.
Disagree. I will choose my health, both in the fact that I don't want to get this virus. And I also don't want to be slaughtered by an actual professional.
That's fair.
Sign me up.
Jason, I know Jason. I don't have to think twice about it. Well, since Russ disagrees, we might as well continue with the disagreeing. Listen, over the last 15 years, Russ and I have tried to have this debate, and it never seems to get finished. We always seem to leave it in like open area. And that is the fact that, Russ, do you still maintain that Ben Wallace should not be in the Hall of Fame?
I do.
Okay.
I do. And I want to preface this with, A, Wallace might be my favorite Piston of all time. I love the guy. But also point B, I think the Hall of Fame is way too easy to get into, period. And then part of this is going to be colored by that notion of we let way too many people in as it is. Like, so I'm inherently going to be more critical than a lot of people. And I think that will definitely show as we talk about it today.
You know, I'm going to argue with you because that's what this is all about. And this is a topic that since we were 13 years old, we've been debating. And I had this debate with my dad this morning because I wanted to see if my thoughts would actually hold, you know, hold water and or not hold water, but it would actually float.
No fair practicing. What is it,
no
practice?
Fair practicing. No, practice? Yeah. We're talking about practice right now. We're talking about practice.
We were talking about, you know, 90s and 2000 basketball players, so it fits.
Yeah, it fits perfectly. Yeah, listen, you're going to beat me every time on the fact that he couldn't score, but, you know, couldn't make a layup to save his life and had one of the worst free throw percentages comparable to Shaq. But in that same breath, you're also talking about a guy that went into a series against arguably the most dominant team of the late 90s, early 2000s, and shut down their best player for five straight games to the point of Ben Wallace is 6'8 on a good day and stopped the most powerful center. And I looked it up, while averaging nearly 13 rebounds a game, two to three blocks, and again, can't score to save his life, but in the span of his career, I think it's hard to say there was anyone more defensively dominant than Ben Wallace. So it makes no sense to me that all these other players are going into the Hall of Fame and we're leaving Ben off because he couldn't make a layup. Even though he did score from time to time with consistency.
That is the name of the game, however. It's basketball. You put the ball in the basket. And while he was transcendent on the defensive side, let's just look at the guys in the Hall of Fame. There's only three that averaged less than 10 points per game for their career. Ben didn't have a single season where he averaged 10 points per game. The closest guy, the lowest guy now, is Dennis Rodman. Is Ben Wallace better than Dennis Rodman? The other one would be Dikembe Mutombo.
Well, we're also
is he better than Dikembe Mutombo?
Well, we're also going to debate that here in a minute because we're going to talk about teams of if they played each other, would they win? And Dennis Rodman's going to be very much in that sense. I believe that he should be in. If Dennis Rodman's in the Hall of Fame, Ben Wallace should be in the Hall of Fame because for the times they played on the Pistons, Ben Wallace and Dennis Rodman filled the exact same role. No one expected
the closest
them to score.
Comp we can come up with.
They are. No
and
one expected
Dennis
them to score.
Did it for
they
longer.
They were defensive hustle. They were expected to be the guy that shut down the other team's best big man, come up with the rebounds, get the blocks, get the putbacks if you had the opportunity. So it is. Because I know he's not paying attention because I can see him right now, I want to ask Justin, if you had to vote one way or the other, is Ben Wallace getting your vote to be in the Hall of Fame?
See, you're going to need to speak to someone who actually understands basketball.
So we're talking to Russ. What was fair about that sentence? Hey.
let me color your opinion with something.
I would need some help.
Yeah.
Okay.
I need some help.
He would be the only Hall of Famer to average less than 6 points per game. He would have the worst free throw percentage in the Hall of Fame. He would have the worst field goal percentage in the Hall of Fame, and it's not particularly close. He would be the fourth player to average under 10 points per game. Granted, he would also be one of two players to ever have four Defensive Player of the Year awards. True, and that is a big point in his favor. But guys like Mutombo, guys like Dennis Rodman have more all-defense team awards, right? They've done it for a lot longer. Ben had four seasons that were defensively stellar, maybe the four best we may have ever seen. Do you think that peak, are you bringing people into Hall of Fame because of their peak or their career? And I think that's really where you have to decide if Ben's it or not.
No, it's career-based. Like, we've talked about Hall of Fames before, and I hate that, like, someone has to be the worst of the best, right? the worst of the best should be pretty damn close to the best in the Hall of Fame. You can't have some guy be this huge outlier in the Hall of Fame. And based on what you're just telling me, other than he had a beautiful hair fro, he's not a part of the Hall of Fame.
The thing is, I think if you're gonna do it, the resume has to be late, especially for him, because I agree with you. He is a tough case to make, but I think you have to lay the resume out all the way through. And that's the fact that he was a key piece, not only on winning a title, but getting them to the finals the following year. On top of the fact that he was a key piece for them making it to 7 consecutive Eastern Conference finals, something you don't see that often, unless you're the Cleveland Cavaliers just for some odd reason getting there every year for no reason.
No, that's fair. So, but if I spelt out the entirety of everything, that wouldn't bias Justin towards my opinion. And where's the fun in that?
Okay. All right. Paul, if you had to vote right now, you voting Ben Wallace into the Hall of Fame?
If there's the Hall of Fame of rebounds.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. Listen, I've said since the beginning, I'm fighting an uphill battle against a stacked deck. I just have to at least put my case down that if a ballot came my way and Ben Wallace's name is on that ballot, I think he did enough in his career throughout the time that he was in Detroit. Obviously, in Chicago, he struggled a little bit. I think he did enough in that sample size to merit being considered for the Hall of Fame.
I think it's going to be a matter of – look, I think his case is better than I'm going to make it. And I think if we have a down year, maybe he slips in. But I don't know that he has the outside of Detroit star pull to really be one of those 4 players per year that gets in. And I think that'll hurt him.
No, I think a weak ballot definitely helps him. A weak ballot absolutely helps him. Okay, so – in the rundown, I teased a little question to go with this. And now the only person that actually knows this question is Paul, because he was obviously talking to me earlier. Paul gets to go first. He does get to go first. Paul, we were talking earlier, and my little question to you is, and it's for all of these guys, but we'll let you go first here. When you look back at Ben Wallace, is there a player in Detroit sports right now that is – the Ben Wallace of Detroit sports, a guy who isn't necessarily the superstar, but is a key piece in where he is to help them be successful, even though no Detroit team is successful right now.
Yeah. See, that's the problem. I wish I had someone specific to say, as far as, someone being a key piece in any Detroit sports, I'd say no. Anyone who is like that person who possibly could be looked to as someone that could contribute. Again, really, I don't know. Like that kind of Ben Wallace, like on the fence, is he worth it to be a Hall of Famer or, a good piece moving forward? I don't think we have anyone like that right now, unfortunately. So I wish I had someone to comment on to give a little bit more of a fruitful answer to, but absolutely not right now. No.
This is tough.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm trying to work through it, generalizing Ben Wallace's strengths to try and see if we can come up with somebody, see if I can logic my way through this. A player who has one tool, who's super elite with that one tool, unheralded, a team-first guy. Think like Luke Glendening if he was actually as good at defense as Justin thinks he is, which he's not, so it's not Luke Glendening.
right, I took my answer.
And just being defensively elite, the problem is, no, in short, I don't think there is anybody because – there isn't a key piece that has that one thing that they're very, very good at in an unobvious way. Like, hey, point. I can look at Mantha and go, hey, he has an elite shot. He may lack in some other qualities, but he has that. But that's not quite Ben because that's not necessarily on the defensive side. So the wings are straight out. They don't have anyone there. The Tigers, again, straight out. Have you seen their defense? They need all of the important positions, and they're god-awful there right now. Miggy Prime was something completely different, way better than the equivalent of Ben Wallace. Pistons, no. I mean, they're rebuilding too. So that leaves us the Lions. I mean, if I'm stretching, maybe it's a Trey Flowers, but I think he's more multifaceted and he doesn't have that one high-end tool that Ben does. So no, I don't think we have an elite specialist like that the Pistons had in Ben.
I've got the answer. I mean, I'll just wait.
No, no, it's your answer, man. Go.
What about, I'm going to, I had all that cockiness and I'm not going to know his name. Wasn't it Justin Coleman who punched out like four balls last year?
Justin Coleman. Oh, look at you. Okay.
I mean,
but
either that or it's like Jimmy Howard's ability not to win a game in this calendar year. His defensive is so good. It's against his own team. And that's his innate ability is to not win when he starts a hockey game.
The goalie's job is to stop the team from winning, right? From scoring and winning. Well, he is stopping one team from winning.
He's doing it, but against us.
Yeah.
Poor Jimmy.
He was good.
The Red Wings have a lot of ones that kind of work in reverse, like, you know, Darren Helm and missing breakaways, for instance.
Yeah.
Like that's.
Yeah, well, I know, but
he goes on the breakaway so that we can't.
Listen,
score.
You got to be strategic about this because I never said that they had to be good traits. Ben Wallace missed free throws.
Oh.
Helm misses breakaways. Like, no. The guy I was kind of leaning towards, but now that I think about it, he is a little too better suited for the sport he's in, was maybe Bertuzzi. But the guy I'm going to go with, and the problem is he's so heralded for what he does do, but. Like Russ said, it's only one skill set that he does really well is maybe Prater. Can't do anything else but kick field goals, but he's also pretty effective at what he does for the one thing he's asked to do.
You can't be bad at something if you don't try it.
Spoken like a true winner. If I don't try, I can't fail.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
I'd maybe even throw in Matt Stafford into the mix, but he can't really put the team on his back anymore. So there's another problem with another guy.
I maintain that's going away. Because
he has a broken.
And for that, I thank him.
Hey, is what it is. All right, moving on. We're staying in Detroit sports. This is a nostalgia episode, if you will. So, Jay, you can go first here. We're without sports, so you got to kind of find things to watch. Obviously.
There's still no sports.
Obviously, a couple days ago was the anniversary of the Avs Wings fight. Big holiday here in Detroit. So I ask you, if you had to sit down and you knew for the next year there's not gonna be any more sports and all this and that, what's the series or the game or whatever that I could tell you just got to watch on a loop?
It would be the March 26th fight. I thought that answer was a little too obvious, so I went with my second favorite thing. It wasn't even a complete game. It wasn't a series. I mean, it was technically a series, but when Steve Yzerman takes the puck away from Wayne Gretzky
across the blue line, he loses
and takes
it.
A slapper. I mean, that's not like the official call, but he Yzerman takes the puck in double OT and ends the St. Louis Blues in one shot. You can't find me a happier human being jumping up and down with joy because he just scored a goal in the playoffs to end the series. That's an iconic, like, for me, like, Paul and I grew up sitting cross-legged in his family room eating Little Caesars pizza every hockey night watching the Wings. Hands down, that was my childhood. You do that, and then you throw – Russ, hang on, I'm sorry. Russ is sitting on his chair while we do this recording, and it just threw me off track. You put me back in that cross-legged stance on the ground. It's Yzerman taking that slapper, and like that is my sports fandom in like a 7-second clip. I know you asked for a series and a game. I broke the rules,
but that's the thing you got to watch on a loop. Okay, no, that's fine.
I'll do it right now. I'll hang up.
I'm not upset with it. I'm not upset with it. I'm just asking. All right, so Paulie Rowe, obviously, you know, you got a little bit of time off from your medical duties. What's the sporting series or a game? If it could be one game, like Jay said, it could be one play that you would watch on a loop for as long as it takes for sports to come back.
Oh man, I'll try to do it by sport actually. So for hockey, that'd probably be. At least for Red Wings' most recent stuff, would be when the Wings beat the Penguins for the Cup. Just probably playing that whole series over again. Just because one is the last time we won the Cup, probably last time we were good, and also beating the Penguins. And the year before, we lost it right back to them. So, but we'll ignore that. We'll keep playing the same series over and over again. So for football, pretty much any win over Ohio State. For Michigan at this point. Again, we have to go back in history. But But probably any moment for Michigan football to play over and over again was, you know, the Heisman pose on Ohio State. You know, that's got to be.
I thought you were going to say you. I thought you were going to say you and me at UMass, but that's cool. I understand.
You didn't make the cut, bud. You didn't make the cut.
Well, for, as far as sporting events
go. Oh, there we go.
If you said life events, that would be different. But, yeah, but for the events on the field itself, how about that?
Trouble with
this guy.
Let's see here. Got to go with – oh, for – okay, we'll go to a moment for the stands. How about that for the Pistons when the little kid was getting all the attention in front of us around the scoreboard, mm-hmm. You know, Megatron. So you guys put me up on your shoulders, and then we got on the scoreboard. That is my favorite Pistons moment because, again, not a big basketball fan. But so there we go. I'll sign a life event for you. And, you know, Dorsch was holding me up, so you get the shout-out there too. And then baseball, again, kind of falls in line with the basketball as well. Nothing too memorable on the field. I wasn't there for anything too super significant. But – I got to say,
Paul, you and I were at the game where Brendan Bosch hit a grand slam for his first home run in Major League Baseball.
It was clearly memorable.
Forget about
I'm not a very memorable person.
Was someone speaking?
Well, see, that's why you were there, so you could help me remember.
All right. Paul has some good ones. Jay, I was worried when he brought up Detroit, Pittsburgh, you were going to go in a little lull telling that story about sitting on the edge of your bed being depressed.
I already thought about Maxime Talbot scored two fucking goals in the third period to end it in game 7 against the Wings. I will never forget his stupid ass.
So that's the one you want to rewatch.
Yeah. See, that's why I was talking about the year before.
All right, Russ, over to you.
Okay, so it may be a little too lawful good for this conversation, but I actually, you know, took your question and answered it as it was. I have a series that I would watch on loop. Honorable mention to the 04 Pistons for knocking off the Lakers, who are essentially the 02 Wings of basketball. But it's the 1997 Stanley Cup Finals. Wings, Flyers, sweep. Philly had home ice. Fun fact, Philly had the lead for 2 minutes that entire series. That's it. That was such a whooping from top to bottom. It's yes, it also includes Konstantinov's last game, so we have the emotional line of it as well, but that team was just dominant. It was 42 years since they won the last cup. Relief, wash over. Fuck the Devils for beating them in 95. 62 wins in 96. Can't get it done. But then 97, just the euphoria and the cathartic joy that came with winning that. I'll watch that today. I'll watch that tomorrow. I'll watch it the next day. That would be my series to watch on loop.
That was 100% my honorable mention. I would like to, as Jay was talking, he actually inspired me to one. If it had to be a play, just a single play I have to watch on the loop, I think it has to be Stafford against Cleveland when he dislocated his shoulder.
Just
forces his way on the field, throws the game-winning touchdown. To me, that was saying, like, listen, I know we're a bad team, but I want to help you guys win. So that would be my play. As for my series, it has to be the 04 Pistons beating the Lakers for a million different reasons. It was the only NBA title I can remember, even though I was alive for the other two. But growing up, I would listen to my dad talk about the Bad Boys and talk about Dumars and Isaiah and just how amazing it was to watch them. And they won one of those titles against the Lakers. So I had to listen to my dad talk about this for years and years. And, of course, we went through the Grant Hill era where they really weren't very good. They wore those ugly teal uniforms with the horse that was on fire. Just wasn't an enjoyable experience. So to see the Pistons come together and win a title against the Lakers, I have my own story now. I could tell my kids. It's just – I could watch it. I actually watched one of the games the other day. It's – just amazing, so much fun to watch. Just cannot miss basketball. Great time, and it's got Ben Wallace, future Hall of Famer.
Wallace works his way in again.
But no, absolutely would have to be that. Go ahead, Jay.
Did you know California has 3,000 lakes? Like I was wondering why they're called the Lakers.
That's not,
there's 3,000 lakes
the Lakers
in California.
Originally from. That's why they're called the Lakers.
Yeah. They're from Minneapolis.
The land of 1,000 lakes.
We're a learning, teaching,
Justin,
podcast.
You just took my thing. I'm the one that gives out fake news to our listeners, not you. Just taking things from me.
Can I abruptly interrupt with some real news though? Because we talked about it in our podcast last week. NCAA approves extra year of eligibility for spring athletes.
Very nice. It's good to hear.
And we talked about that last podcast with people trying to get extra years and get on
Paul, what would your opinion be on that? Do you think that, like, the baseball teams, the golf teams, you know, college basketball and all that, like, I guess they would technically just be their tournament, but do you think these athletes who miss out on their season should get an extra year of eligibility?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're missing out on something that could be, like, the last time they ever play in, like, that big of an arena or that big of a team in general. So, like, you can't, like, you know, they can't miss out on that opportunity.
Well, and I said on the show last week, it is for that too. Like, you work so hard, this is your last chance. But for some of these people, these seasons are their chance to impress scouts, to get a chance at the next level, because they maybe aren't on a radar, but they have a big season, they have a big tournament, and, you know, that's their chance to make a club in major leagues. So it's definitely something. It really is. On to our last topic, and this is the one that's going to eat up a big majority of the time, because we decided – a little while ago when we were putting together our list of best ofs, what would be some topics we'd really enjoy debating. And I thought of, in today's world where everybody gets compared to everybody on, you know, a level of how great they were, what if we could put some of the best teams we've ever seen, or in one case, worst teams we've ever seen, on the field, on the ice, against each other, and see how they'd fare. So we're going to lead off with the one that we really have no stake in, because neither of the teams have anything to do with Michigan, Detroit, anything like that. Russell, I'm going to let you lead off on this one. If the 72-win Chicago Bulls, considered the greatest team ever on the hardwood, was to match up against the 73-win but did not win a title Golden State Warriors, and looking through that sheet, the Golden State Warriors set records on records on records on records. If they lined it up for a 7-game series, who you taking to win that series?
Well, I wanted this to be closer than it was, but we have conversations about Michael Jordan being the greatest of all time. Do we have conversations about Steph Curry being the greatest right now? Like, no, not as much, right? So,
greatest shooter of all time, I don't think it can be questioned.
Sure, we can talk about that, but talking an entire game, like, I'm still taking Jordan. Obviously, I don't think that's too close. You want to go through the other ones? Do they have a Pippen and Klay Thompson? No, I'm still taking Pippen. Rodman over Draymond Green? I'm still taking Rodman. Kerr the coach is better than Kerr the player, so advantage Warriors there. But it's really, I don't even know that I think that Golden State team was better the next year, even though they won less. So I can't even say that they're better than the presumed best team of all time if I don't even think they're the best Warriors team of the decade. So I gave it to the Bulls.
Okay. All right, I like it. Jay, over to you.
Again, you're tapping into a very empty well of NBA knowledge. All I know is that the Bulls have been known for their basketball game. They can be as bad as they are post Derrick Rose now, and people still know that they were the shit back then. So just off that very tiny nugget.
Paul, I know how deep your wealth of knowledge is when it comes to NBA basketball. So I'm going to ask you to tap into it as he stares me down.
Oh, no, you're kind of breaking up there a little bit.
It's probably good. I said, I know how deep your wealth of knowledge is when it comes to NBA basketball. So I'm going to ask you to tap into it a little bit and tell me who you take in this series.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, to the extent of my knowledge, you know, there's just no beating those Bulls at that time with, you know, their stacked roster. So, you know, I could see, you know, at least highlights of what they could do. So I imagine if their average play and average games looked like that, I mean, I guess, you know, that's just the team that, you know, you feared then. And
well, I hate to break it to all you listeners out there that thought it was going to be anything otherwise, but it's a clean sweep. Chicago Bulls would absolutely take down the Golden State Warriors. I don't think it'd even be a close series. I have a feeling that one would end at 5. There's just too much talent, too much firepower on those teams, and listen, they won 72 and then took the title. Golden State couldn't even get the title to mirror it up. So it'd be a fun series to watch because it'd be a lot of talent, but I just think in the end those Bulls were just far too talented.
I agree.
What do you guys say? You want to get the painful one out of the way real quick, and we'll go from there. All right.
Do it.
Jay's got a big smile on his face. So Jay, I'm gonna let you go ahead. Tell me what we're talking about here.
I'm just happy to be here.
Justin, I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna ask you. This would be the ugliest game in the history of football. Ugliest game in the history of football. But if our 0-16 Lions took the field against the 0-16 Cleveland Browns, would one of these teams come off the field with a win?
Well, we can die. Technically, someone would win.
It would end in a 3-3 tie.
If you give me a line, I'm taking the over. If you give me a spread, I'm taking the Browns. Just on roster alone, the Browns should win this matchup. David Njoku, Isaiah Correll, Duke Johnson, Sammy Coates. Quarterback is negligible. I mean, it was Kevin Hogan. Sean Kaiser sitting in third string. I would take the Browns in a heartbeat. The only thing that we had, and by the way, I had to look up the roster from that 08 team, Calvin Johnson.
No.
There was no
Kevin
running
Jones
back.
Was,
no
30
end.
Yards away from a 1,000-yard rushing season.
So you're 30 yards away from being okay.
For the Lions,
for the
last time we had a
1,000-yard
rusher.
Would have been really good.
Just pointing that
keep
out.
Keep it in Michigan, sure. But I, based on names and talent, I don't know what happened to DeShone Kizer and Sammy Coates, but that team – they should be able to take care of the Lions. It doesn't matter if it's a home or an away game. Like, give me the over. Give me the Browns, whatever they're favored by. I'll take the over. Browns would win that game. They should, just on roster alone. Now, if you're actually going to go look at the style of game that they played, you know, do they run the ball more? Do they throw the ball more? What does the defense actually look like? That would be a very in-depth analysis, and I didn't do that.
I'm going to stop you right there.
The Browns.
I can tell you what both style they played. They both played bad. Bad football. Both same style. No, I agree with you. Calvin, 1,300 receiving yards, 12 touchdowns. Calvin had a heck of a year. Our starting quarterback for a majority of it, at least the quarterback with the best numbers, was Dan Orlovsky, who threw for about 1,600 yards, was 8-8, 8 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Kevin Jones, 218 carries for 976 yards, 8 touchdowns, average 4 yards a carry, so not great, but also better than what we seem to be able to do now with the football. Listen, for any other reason than the fact that it's the Cleveland Browns without Baker Mayfield, I'm going to say that the Cleveland Browns finished this game still 0-16. Lions, if you look at the Lions' schedule, the Lions were actually in a fair amount of these games and had chances to win late, and they just pulled off lion-like moves and made mistakes and lost. So I'm going to say the Lions find a way to squeak one out. It's going to be ugly. Like Russ said, it probably ends in a 3-3 overtime tie that we all can enjoy for the rest of our lives. But Russ, I'm going to say Cleveland stays winless. Lions pull off a victory, an ugly victory. Dan Orlovsky probably runs out of the end zone at least one time.
You almost went that whole time without bringing it up.
Is that like Voldemort?
You almost did it. All right. So you brought it up, so I'll start off with that point. If we are assuming full health, then that means John Kitna plays, and that means at the very least Dan Orlovsky doesn't walk out of the back of the end zone against the Vikings in a game they lost by 2 points. So that right there, we're already talking about not an 0-16 team. That's the razor-thin quality that we're talking about. Points per game, awful, both sides. Browns 14.6 points per game, 25.6 again, 16.84, 32.3 again. So, lack of offense, both sides. Lions a worse defense. The question becomes, can Calvin Johnson, on his own, overcome everything else going on? And I think the answer ultimately is yes, because it's DeShone Kizer, who's now with the Raiders, by the way, can he muster 17 points? Maybe, probably. But I would take Calvin to get at least 21 against Cleveland in a Detroit team that doesn't really have any other options. So 250 yards, 2 touchdowns, Calvin Johnson. It's still the ugliest game that you'll watch, but I will take our Detroit Lions.
Yeah, It's going to be the worst game ever. All that's left is Dio Poliro and his surgical precision knowledge of how ugly this game would be.
So we got the 0-16 Lions, 0-16 Browns, and that would be a situation where we Lions fans would call hope with a question mark. Yes, with a question mark. And I don't need to look at the stats. I don't need to look at the roster. It doesn't matter, because when we Lions fans have hope, it just gets crushed. And so when the game happens, you know who really wins? The refs. The refs will win this game.
Fair.
They'll win this game for the Browns, and the Browns would have totally crushed our hopes and dreams, and the Lions would remain perfectly imperfect.
Perfectly imperfect. Perfectly imperfect. Episode title. Here we go. Yeah.
Perfectly imperfect. So what you're saying is nobody's going to win in this situation. That's what I heard from this.
Well, the refs.
I would. What kind of degenerate do you have to be to try and bet on this game? Show me the
you
money
value
line.
Life.
Show me the money line.
Let's get Cuba down here. Show me the money line.
Show me the money line. Oh, good God. Oh, all right.
I
well,
do it.
Basically, what we're saying is there's no good answer to that one because it's going to be painful no matter what. But moving over, now we're going to talk about some teams that actually did win titles in Michigan, did have success. These are the two that I think if you really wanted to argue, these are probably I guess you can make an argument for the following year when it came to the Red Wings, but these are probably the four most successful teams we've seen in Detroit since we've been alive. And we're going to lead off with the easier of the two, because I know the hockey one's going to go for a minute. So, Justin, I'm not going to go to you first because you don't pay attention when it comes to basketball. So I'm going to go over to Russ and let Russ have a minute here.
Yep.
Russ, I'm going to make this fair to you. I'm going to make this fair to you because they won back-to-back titles. You can pick the 88-89 or the 89-90 Pistons to go up against, but would those bad boys Pistons be able to win a series against the going to work Pistons if they played each other?
The fact that you already had to mention their back-to-back titles already lead into my decision. I did go with the 88-89 against the 0-3-0-4 going to work Pistons, both title winners at the time. Spoiler alert, 538's already had this discussion, and the 88-89 team actually made their top 10 all-time list. They make mine as well.
Okay.
I think hands down that's who it is. Watching the bigs fight alone, the Wallaces against the Lampiers, the Rodmans, the John Sallys, it would be bloody and it would be a blast. But it's Isaiah.
Oh, yeah.
He's the difference. He's the big difference. Isaiah and Dumars against Rip and Chauncey, I'm going to take Isaiah. And it's tough. But ultimately, those Pistons, they finished first in the East, 63 wins. These Pistons didn't even finish first in the East in theirs, as good as they were. The difference is probably taking Darko instead of Carmelo Anthony. That maybe could have swung it the other way. So good jobs, Joe. You won by losing by winning. Something like that. Gets to be on both sides. The Joe Dumars Bowl, I'm giving to the bad boys.
Okay. Which, by the way, if you guys haven't heard, Carmelo Anthony in an interview said that they would have won 2 to 3 titles if they had drafted him over Tayshaun Prince. Over Darko. So let that be what it is. You know, we'll never know. But I want to ask you something, Russ, before I move on. A little interesting when we're talking, because you pick that team. So that team really, you get to have the mirror. Interesting that mid-season, both the 0-3-0-4 Pistons and the 8-89 Pistons made trades for pieces that became vital to them winning the titles. Pistons, the 89 Bad Boys traded away their leading scorer to pick up Mark Aguirre from the Dallas Mavericks. They win the title that year. The going to work Pistons made a massive trade, 3-team trade, to pick up Rasheed Wallace. They march right into the into the finals and win the title. Two big moves, kind of were the key focal points for them winning titles.
And I think it is no coincidence, Dumars saw what happened and tried to do it again, but they were both defensive stalwart teams. That's a very grinding play. And to bring in a fresh body that can give you something new, that can be quite the jolt. Now, a guy like Rasheed, it was a lot more than just a jolt. But it's that kind of new blood and the kind of grit and grind that they did that can really energize you and put you over the top.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jay, over to you, buddy.
I'm going old school. It's got to be Bad Boys. For not only just the fact that they wore proper basketball shorts, that they moved their legs more, they had them up a little higher. So I'll give it to that. They had better jerseys. Second of all, going to work is like that name of a team is equivalent to like Godfather Part 3. You don't need to see it. It's a terrible movie. Going to work Pistons is a terrible tagline for a roster. I'm going with Bad Boys going to work, which is something I wish I could actually do right
so
now.
You pick the thing you can't do right now.
So I'm going Bad Boys.
You don't pick that one, and you do pick Bad Boys for Life, a movie that came out this year. Very topical. Well done. Bang, bang.
Bang, bang.
This is so rough, so rough. All right, D.O. Paul, you're up.
Oh, man. So I don't know how to really follow Justin's comments because that was pretty awesome, but I would have to go with history as well. I was like basically just like a twinkle in my parents' eye at that point. So I don't, I didn't really obviously follow those Pistons or see them live, but just the fact that they, like just from what I saw about them through like little documentaries on them, is that their aggression, their style of play. I mean, they get the Bad Boy title for a reason. It's like, and you gotta be, you know, you gotta have that grit to play. You gotta have that grit to win. And so I gotta go with that. I gotta respect that.
Okay, absolutely. All right. Time to show you guys why I'm the host of this show. Excuse me. I am going to disagree with all of you. I'm going to take the going to work 03-04 Pistons. When I do that, it's because I'm looking at one thing. Everybody's going to say, well, it depends on what era they played in. Back in the 80s and 90s, you could tackle people, and it wasn't actually called the foul.
Jordan rules.
Well, this is true. Absolutely. And that's the thing that Laimbeer thrived on, because Laimbeer could get away with the jabs and the pulls and all that to, you know, to get the rebounds. Well, as I think about that, that's all good and well, but I like Bill Laimbeer. I'm a big fan of him. I know for a fact Bill Laimbeer probably didn't want to go pulling on either of the Wallace brothers because he probably would have gotten knocked out. Ben Wallace tried to tackle Ron Artest for pushing him lightly. I can't imagine what he would do if Bill Laimbeer tried to slam him to the floor. And Rasheed Wallace, that's the thing. Rasheed Wallace probably would have gotten tossed out of the game in the first 2 minutes, but
it is what it is.
Dennis Rodman would have killed someone. But when you look at it from the basketball aspect, I really do. I broke down the fact that line these rosters up. You have Isaiah Thomas, who is barely 6 feet tall. Joe Dumars, who's 6'4". Guire is 6'6" on a good day. Then you have Rodman and Laimbeer, or Mahorn and Laimbeer, however you want to do it. Both guys, Rodman is barely 6'7", and Laimbeer is about 7 feet tall. Your starting four for the Bad Boys are the same height as the guards for the going-to-work Pistons. Chauncey Billups is 6'4". Rip Hamilton is 6'7". Tayshaun Prince is 6'9". Okay, granted, Ben Wallace is probably about 6'8", 6'9" on a good day. Maybe 6'11 with the afro. But then you have Rasheed Wallace, who's 7 feet. These Pistons would just body you down into the post and score like that. Isaiah Thomas can't guard either of those guys. Rip Hamilton is more than quick enough to keep up with Isaiah Thomas the entire time. Joe Dumars and Chauncey Billups would have a great back and forth. I think it'd be amazing. You talked about watching Ben Wallace and Rodman go at it. I think it'd be more fun to watch Tayshaun Prince and Rodman go at it. Tayshaun didn't give up on a single play, i.e. Reggie Miller getting blocked when he was half a court in front of him. But I think it'd be great. Paul, you got one finger up. I'm hoping that means you've got something to say.
Only thing I got to say is if you're a bad boy, size doesn't matter.
I don't think we have to say that anymore.
I think you're right. My point is totally disproved. I am so sorry for what I just. No, I just. I think if you look at it, you have to look at what they would be. Whether this is a four game series, I don't think that either of these teams would like you know be able to handle a seven game series. But I just think the going to work Pistons were. They were a bigger team. They were a much more fundamentally minded team because they couldn't get away with the cheap pulls and all that that the Bad Boys could. So I just think if you played seven games at the end of it, the 03-04 Pistons come out on top as NBA champions against these guys. It'd be an amazing series to watch.
It would be bloody.
Absolutely be amazing. They're the two best teams of the the city of Detroit has ever had when it comes to basketball. What I love is we're all, for those of you guys who don't know, we're on Skype as well right now. We can see each other, and my camera just lined up perfectly that it looked like Russ and Paul were just staring into each other's eyes, even though they're about half an hour away from each other. No, they both – one of you looked right, one of you looked left. It looked like you were looking
this
right at each other.
This is making for great radio.
This is making for great radio. This is making for we're all quarantined and going crazy. Yeah,
the ravings of a quarantine mind.
True.
All that. Right.
We are?
True comment.
I can tell he's itching for it, so I'm going to let him go first here. Jay is just moving around in his seat. He's fidgeting. And this is about the only time Justin can work the word Dino Cicerelli into a conversation that works, even though Dino Cicerelli wasn't on either of these teams. Justin, here's the big matchup. You've got the 96-97 Red Wings, that cup-hungry team. They had been almost like the Bad Boys and the going-to-work Pistons. They'd been getting there time and time again. They just couldn't get over that last hump to finish it off. Then you have the 2001-2002 basically the Hall of Fame team. You can just call it what it is. The Hall of Fame team. The team that was slated to win the cup the second the puck dropped in the very first game. So I'm asking you, when you look at it, if we put these guys on the ice, and what's crazy to have this debate is a lot of these guys were on both teams. A very large percentage of this team is the same team, just add a couple pieces and subtract a few. So I'm asking you, does the hunger for that first cup of the 97 team, does it get is that enough for them to get it done against arguably the greatest hockey team ever assembled? Okay.
Mm-mm. No, you already made my point for me. It was the greatest hockey team ever assembled. I don't know exactly when we acquired certain players, but when you get the likes of like Luke Robitaille mid-season.
No, they acquired all of them. And also, I think they acquired Robitaille, Hull, Dominic Hasek.
No,
Coffee got traded for Shane.
Coffee was like 96.
Coffee was traded for Shane.
Leading up to the 97.
Do your homework, kid.
No,
Luke Robitaille, Brett Hull. I haven't had coffee in a month. Luke Robitaille, Brett Hull, Dominic Hasek. All of them were acquired in the offseason. And I there might have been other little pieces that I don't remember. And then really, if you think about that other team, it was Shane. Oh, and then obviously they signed Chelios a year or two prior. So Chelios had already been on the team for a year or two. But Shanny was the spark plug. Three times now we can talk about teams winning a title by making a move mid-season to acquire that final piece. So, and it's a fair debate, but does the hunger for that first cup that they've been scratching and clawing to get, is that enough to overcome a team that you could literally put an all-star roster up against them and you have to give them fair odds?
No, it's the 0-2 team. They were a more refined team. They got players in their prime. The moves that they made in the offseason, that team will always stick out to me. And, Russ, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that was pre-cap era. Mm-hmm. So that was like no holds barred, grab what you want
for
and go. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Getting Hasek, that was huge for that year. So I will go for the more refined team in 02. Even though I loved Shanny, one of my favorite childhood memories was Shanny doing one of the armpit things to a lady who clearly needed, she just, in his opinion, she needed some help, right? Those were fun times back then. But in 02, that was just like that roster. I was like, we're always going to be on top. We're always going to be the best team. We're always going to get pieces. We were a destination team. Not so much now. But that 0-2 team would take
all right,
anybody.
All right, I like it. Let me, Jay, I'm gonna throw a little bit to you, just for the fun of it. Russ, sorry, I'm taking your job for a minute. You can feel free to correct me if I got anything wrong. 96-97. Shanny led the team with 46 goals. Yzerman led the team with 63 assists. Shanny and Yzerman both 85-plus points. Shanahan, this is the one I mentioned to Paul earlier, and I found this amazing. Now, this might not be as amazing as I think it is. Shanny had 20 power play goals that season. The next person had 8. So, just showed you what Shanny was playing at. Vladdy finished with a plus 38, and Marty Lapointe finished with 167 penalty minutes. On the regular season, Shanny had 131 right behind him. Now you go to the other side, you go to the 0-2 team. Again, Shanny led the team 37 goals to Nick Lindstrom's 50 assists, Total points, 75 for Shanny. Shanny had 118 penalty minutes. Chelly finished with a plus 40 on the season. So those are the players that contributed the most for the teams. And it's pretty clear neither of these teams win a cup without Brendan Shanahan from what I see.
That's fair.
So,
yeah, no.
Oh, no, I was trying to describe. I'm giving you all the facts, letting you realize Paul Coffey wasn't on either of those teams. Just trying to help you where I can. Before the stat man gives us all the knowledge we didn't know, Paul, I'm going to ask you real quick. Does that 96-97 team stand a chance against the Hall of Fame?
You mean the 02 wing?
The Hall of Fame team, yeah, the 02, the Hall of Fame team.
Oh, I see. I mean, it's tough to say kind of only because there are so many like of the same players. But however, you know, the last time we probably did the best in the offseason to grab as many people as we did was probably for that 02 team. So I guess for the talent that we pulled in for that team, I got to give the edge to the 02 team.
Okay. Can I give the edge? Is there a reason 02 gets the edge over 97, or is it pretty much just the amount of talent they had accumulated?
Amount of talent plus some stats I found too, but I don't
know. No. By all means, I have plenty. You take as many as you want.
By all means.
So, thank you. So what I found was, like, first of all, their record. The 02 team, they were 51, 17, 10, and 4. So they got 116 points, finished first in the NHL at that year. The 96-97 yep. team, they were 38, 26, and 18, got 94 points, and they finished second in the NHL. And, you know, they had 26 teams in the league, I think, at that point, and then 30 in the 01-02 era. And then you look at where they ranked for goals for. So 96-97, they were 6 out of 26 at 253 goals. And not far behind at all was 0102. They got 251 goals, ranked second out of 30. And basically, to skip ahead to their, I don't have the exact math for what they did for their strength of schedule, but it looks like the 96-97 team, they were ranked 21st out of 26 for strength of schedule, and then the 0102 was 14th out of 30. So their schedule was not super favorable for the 96-97 team. So I got to give them credit. It looks like they had to fight a little bit harder, just if you look at the stats alone. I don't remember exactly that full season back in my head from being 6 to 7 years old. So it looks like they had to fight a little bit harder along the way, whereas the 0102 team, they seem to pretty much dance around everybody if you just look at their stats alone.
Interesting little thing to add here. If you look at it, and again, this is you'd have to go through every game and see why it actually took the 0-2 team longer to win the cup in the playoffs. The 96-97 team finished with a 16-4 record to the fact that the 0-2 team finished with a 16-7 record. It took them three more games to seal the deal over what it took the 96-97. Now, again, that's all depending on who they played, strength of schedule. But, Russ, I know I can see you smiling and nodding there, so I think you've probably got something to follow up that.
I point out the three more games they played because they were lucky that the three more games the 0-2 team played, that someone didn't die. This is the main thing going against this 0-2 team that no one's brought up. That was an old team. Yes, they had 9 Hall of Famers and probably one more in Datsuk joining them. But they also had, by the time they won the Cup, 10 players over the age of 35. That's unreal. You can't do that anymore. You could barely do it then. And if it wasn't the fact that it was Hull at 37 and Robitaille at 35 when they brought him in, you really couldn't have even done it then. They were playing further down in the lineup than you would really expect. So we talked about it, guys like Shanahan, Yzerman, Lidstrom being on both teams. I'm going to take the younger and more in their prime version of those guys. All right, everyone's giving me funny looks. Okay.
Paul dropped again. So okay. I was letting you finish your thought.
So no, I'm taking the 97 win team. No, they're not the President Trophy winner. No, they're not have the first team to have 3 500-plus goal scorers on a roster at the same time. But they're young, and we're talking about the full Russian five. We're talking about prime Grindline. Better Yzerman, better Shanahan, better Fedorov, better Lidstrom. I'm going to take the younger, scrappier 97 team over the star-studded Hall of Fame on their way to the retirement home 2002 team.
No, I'm with you. I think I actually, before we even like started talking this through, I had already penciled it in that it was going to be the 97 team. I kind of led off to it in my questions to Jay. I personally think it's that hunger and desire to capture that cup. A lot of these guys, as much as they want cup after cup after cup after cup, a lot of these guys had already lifted Stanley Cups by the time 01-02 had. I think Luke Robitaille and maybe a couple other guys were still hunting for cups. Everyone else had already gotten to. They want more, obviously. But every one of these guys in 96, 97 was fighting to get their hands on a Stanley Cup. And I think that's what drove them to be that much more competitive. And obviously, like you said, Russ, the talent was aging, but it was still – amazing talent. You still have what I think he's still the highest scoring left winger in NHL history, Luke Robitaille. You have Brett Hull who's in the 700 club. By the way, in doing my research, I just want to say I love him. He's our GM till he doesn't want the job anymore. But how the hell does Steve Yzerman not play one more year? You were 8 goals away from 700 career goals.
His body was so
what is wrong
down.
With you? He could do the Brett Hull, though. He could literally just sit in the slot, throw him. He'll get 7 goals in a couple games. He doesn't even have to check anybody. Jay, I see you got your finger up, so I'm going to let you go, buddy. Jay, you have to have your microphone on to be a part of this show. All right, well, Jay's figuring out microphones, so give me one sec. We can't hear you, buddy.
Want me to talk in the meantime?
All right. No, we're talking to Jay. Apparently, Jay's gone. Jay's gone altogether. How does Steve Yzerman not? I mean, I get he was never like Mr. All About Me. That's why he's the captain. But a chance at 700 it does not come along very often. I mean, Jaromír Jágr played until he was 72 years old just to get it. He is like his jersey number matched his age by the time he left the NHL.
Just,
it was ridiculous.
40, he hadn't played a full season since. I'm looking at.
Probably
So I'm nitpicking. We'll be a little less. So the 05-06 team is his last. 98-99 was the only time he came within two games of doing a full season. The year after, he came within 4. But after that, we're talking a significant amount of time that he missed in every season. That's just a broken down 40-year-old body.
And no, and I completely get that. It's just, it's one of those, like, I think it's probably more us wanting him to be in that club than him really caring if he is or is not in that club. But just seeing Steve Yzerman be able to be a part of this team, or I mean, being able to enter that club, do that. Listen, he's the greatest captain in North American sports for a reason. And he's not even from North America. He's not even from America. So it's one of those things that, it would have been great to see, but I do. I believe I'm with you, Russ. I think 96, 97, just they wanted it because they hadn't been there yet. You had enough guys where there was so much talent stacked on that 02 team that if they get a cup, they get a cup. If they didn't get a cup, it wasn't going to be for a lack of trying. So we'll see. Unfortunately, I've got a little bald man nodding his head incessantly at me. He's kind of scaring me a little bit. I don't know if we're going to be able to get Jay back on this show, unfortunately. I really wish we could. But we had Dio Pauly Rowe on this show today, and I think that's the best thing. Haven't had him on the show in a while. Obviously, Paul, we hope you're being safe out there. You are actually one of the people on the front lines of everything going on and why we're talking about old sports, not current sports. So I hope you take care of yourself, and we really appreciate you being on
Absolutely.
The show today, buddy.
Happy to be back and talking to you guys. I miss you guys a lot.
We miss you too, pal. And Statman Russ Ivanek, I see you leaning back in the chair, very comfortable with the work you've done today, giving us the best stats for some of the best teams. Listen, your stats are great, but somewhere in there you overlooked the stat of willpower and heart to keep Ben Wallace
out of the Hall
of Fame.
I'm just going to leave that there. I'm going to say wash your damn hands, and it's been a pleasure.
Wash your damn hands. It's been a pleasure. Jay wishes he could be with us. We love you, buddy. Appreciate all you did. Watch a basketball game so we can start having a little more in-depth NBA conversations. And I ended the show this way last week. Until something gets better, I'm going to end it this way again this week. Instead of one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting, it's do the right thing, make the right decisions. It's going to be one small step for you, one giant leap forward, and giving us all a very much better chance at tomorrow. So for everybody here at Armchair Sports Talk, I'm your host, Derek Dorsch, and we'll see you next time.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.